Hi and welcome everybody to Polemics Rag Podcast. My name is Victor Harriton and I'm an assistant editor at Polemics Magazine and an executive producer of this podcast. And today it's my pleasure to walk you through our second episode. In the previous episode, Jason introduced you to the geopolitical implications of the year of war in Ukraine, as he enjoyed the one-to-one talk with the one and only Professor Mangat. This time, we decided to try yet another format as we recorded an event in March which became very dear to our hearts, an absolutely wonderful and insightful panel on the role of women in global crisis. You're about to hear three keynote speeches focusing on different crisis areas such as agriculture, sustainability, health, domestic politics and international relations around the globe. So close your eyes and dive in the unique atmosphere of the Festsaal of the DA campus in Vienna. Rana Ghanem, Chief of the Energy Systems and the Infrastructure Division at UNIDO, kicks off the conversation this time.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for the invitation to be part of this session. I'm fair to say, one of the only ones here from the Global South, and so I would like to bring that perspective as well. We're talking about crisis of energy, and yes, of course, here we're talking about how do we supply natural gas to keep houses in Austria and in Europe warm. But on the other side, we have more than 750 million people across the world, and particularly in Africa, that don't even have access to electricity. We have more than 3 billion people that don't have access to clean cooking fuels and still use firewood actually for that. And so when we want to talk about that energy crisis, I think it's important to think of how these figures are around the world. And women, of course, I think part of the existing narrative is women are the ones that bear the brunt of going to fetch wood for the houses in Africa. They're the ones going to fetch the water as well. And so they really also are very much affected by the energy crisis and by the lack of energy. At the same time, they're the ones suffering from climate change the most. I've met a lot of women that were even from Africa running away from fires that are starting up because of climate change. So yes, we might be just a bit more comfortable here to have a few degrees less. I mean, I am, because I'm from a Mediterranean and it feels good to have the temperatures a bit warmer. But on the other side, there are many places in the world that are really facing those effects and firsthand. Hand on. I believe in changing narratives, and I believe that we are not here only to talk about women being, you know, victims of climate change or victims of lack of access to energy. And this is where, you know, why I love the work that we do at UNIDO and within the United Nations broadly, because there's lots of opportunities actually for women to change this narrative. And the ones that we focus on a lot are helping women in growing entrepreneurship and, you know, developing technologies and business models that do bring climate solutions and energy solutions across the world in different countries. And we have many women, young and old, that are really thinking of very innovative solutions. And at UNIDO, we actually help them to bring these solutions into the market by helping in this business acceleration process and helping them go through what we call the Valley of Death. The second area is actually access to finance, because yes, it's great. I do have my bank account. I have here, you know, my independence in a sense, but lots of women across the world also still have lack of access to proper financial instruments to also help grow their businesses. So this is another area where we really work with financial institutions and try to develop better financing models that help women access better financing. Another area also is for sure policy. along with policy, also skills. We really need to make sure that there are some commitments from private sector, from government, from different institutions towards these gender equality goals. We need to make sure that there are policies in place that support this progression as well in the careers of women. And at the same time, we need to work on developing systems that provide women with more the skills that are needed to also come into the workplace, but also to continue. We are facing very difficult times. And also, last comment on the mental well-being. I think also we have to really start looking at that more closely, because as I see now with the global crises and many of those really inspiring women leaders at the end of the day quitting and coming back with burnout, we give a lot of passion in our work as well as women. And I would say it's time also that we really turn attention a lot more to this also. I'll stop here perhaps. Thank you.
The next speaker, Maria Blumenhofer, the youth representative of the Austrian Commission for UNESCO and a second-year student at the Diplomatische Akademie, further follows up on the role of women, including youth in particular, in the international issues.
I'm very grateful to be on the same board as so many inspiring women. I'm very interested in sustainable development, and diversity and equality is mentioned several times in the sustainable development goals, actually, in the goal 5 and 10. So we see already that equality and inclusion are very important topics to reach a sustainable future. And for us to reach this future, we need to have the political framework for that. We are not only in a crisis of the climate, but also in a crisis of our whole system, basically. For us to be able to make this framework happen, we need to start from the basis. So we need to start with education, we need to start with inclusion, we need to start with diversity and open communication, and especially international cooperation. This does not only need to happen on the national level and on the level of our westernized world, but also needs to include all parts of the world, especially the global south, as we've already heard. Us sitting here is a very good start, but we don't only need to have a representation in a small scale, but we also need to be represented on a large scale, which is why it is very interesting to see already young women being included in, for example, the climate conference, the COP. There is a youth advisory board going to the COP each year, which is actually very interesting, but has already been harshly criticized by several parties, which is a shame, as we have been criticized for going there as a holiday, something like that. It's sad to be told, okay, you actually don't have a voice, you're not as important, you're just going there to go there and not actually because you have to say something. What is very, very interesting to see that we have several crises going on. We have the, as I've already stated, the crisis of equality. We have a global health crisis. We have a crisis of education. And if the climate crisis proceeds, these crises are actually just going to get worse. As the earth is getting warmer, there's going to be more droughts, there's going to be environmental hazards, there's going to be a lack of nutrition, which is most likely the women's topic. And during these crises, as they are getting worse and worse, women are targeted even more, especially during migration. There has been the refugee crisis, the crisis that is not only based around political instability, but also happened due to a drought in 2008. There have been broad dangers for women, especially during the refugee crisis. There have been over 6 million unwanted pregnancies due to lack of preservatives and due to lack of education, especially sexual health education. And something that followed was actually over 5,000 women died due to unsafe abortions. So as you see, it's not only a crisis for nature and environment, but it's also a crisis for each and every one of us. And it's important that we don't only look at our small circle. The first thing, the first people we always look at, because that's what we're used to as humans, is the family. Let's look at the family, let's look at close friends, let's look at acquaintances. But we also have to look at people beyond our bubble that are affected of this crisis. Us, we have a big privilege to be actually sitting here and to have an education to be able to talk about the crisis affecting us. But many people, especially many women, many girls, don't have this privilege. And with this privilege comes responsibility to actually do something against it. During the climate crisis or other political crises, the first thing that usually gets left out, as we see already in Iran, is education for women. And education for every and all of us is the baseline to make conscious decisions and to actually know our rights and to fight for our rights. And to be able to have this education, we need the political system, and we need us, as a, out of a privileged position, we need to help include everyone of the affected people in the conversation about the climate crisis, and try to do this via international cooperation, not only of the Western world, but also include all people of this world. Thank you.
The final speech we've selected for this special episode is delivered by Angela Reithuba, the program manager at the Ban Ki-moon Center for Global Citizens. Angela shares more about the inequalities which are targeted by the Ban Ki-moon Center working groups today.
At the Ban Ki-moon Center, we work on the two legacies of Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, so on the Sustainable Development Goals and the Paris Climate Agreement. And we work particularly with current leaders throughout our advocacy work we do, and with future leaders, engaging in young people in, for example, implementing micro SDG projects in their communities on several different topics. And I'm responsible for our Elevating Agricultural Adaptation Program, as we call it. So what we do is we advocate for climate adaptation, so finance and also political commitment, especially within the agricultural sphere, so for smallholder farmers, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, where people are most affected by the current climate change that's already taking place. And particularly women and youth who are at the forefront of this. Right now, when we look at the climate finance topic in general for smallholder farmers, and then I would like to talk quickly about what we see, what's the situation for women, is there are estimates that around only 1.7% of the climate finance actually goes to smallholder farmers. And we have to think that there are an estimated 500 million farms, which includes even more people, depending on that, in the world, particularly Southeast Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, and also Latin America. Now, within the climate finance, we, since the Paris Agreement, the countries convened to come up every year, as of 2020, with $100 billion. To climate, so both mitigation and adaptation. And we know the latest estimates are that in 2019, only 83.5 billion were actually provided by the mainly the public sector to climate finance. So if you calculate this down and you think, okay, 1.7% actually goes to smallholder farmers, there's a huge gap, and we try by talking to countries, to governments, but also to international organizations, to advocate for the smallholder farmers, that they also get the share that is needed of climate finance. But of course, there are also other pots where they could get the support. And it's also, if we look at the investment now on the finance side, there are many business cases also that this actually makes sense. There are estimations that about $1 invested in climate resilient agriculture actually can have a return of up to $10 of a mid to long term period. So if you look at all of that, it makes a lot of sense. Now, what we see, and we also travel to sub-Saharan Africa as well to visit their projects, to talk to the leaders also in the recipient countryside, particularly on the gender topic and on women. There, in some countries, they actually produce up to 70% of the food. So in countries like Mozambique, for example. And there is a huge gender gap in the productivity. That's what the data tells us also from UN Women. In the productivity that female smallholder farmers have compared to their male counterparts. And this can be, for example, in Nigeria, up to 30%. Of productivity gap of women compared to men. So why is that? There is it's a complex interplay of social and also climate related issues. So you may have many norms and gender roles and responsibilities allocated that actually lead to time poverty of women, so that they have to take over a lot of the core work, etc. in general. It's also the lack of access to resources. So this might be finance, this can be land, property rights, for which actually you need to then get access to finance in some cases, and also inputs. And this could be for several reasons, either because they are not able to participate in like informative kind of sessions where they would get informed about how to do, for example, rotation farming, or how to apply climate resilient techniques, how to access a market of crops, etc. And then it's also due to climate change, many increasing labor that they face, for example, to fetch water. They have to walk longer distances, which again adds up to the time poverty they have. So it's a very complex interplay. However, that's when you start addressing these issues, and this is very much beyond the agricultural topic as well, you address a number of other topics for those women there as well. So they are at the forefront of the climate crisis, and particularly smallholder farmers who are among the poorest in the world are at the forefront, and that's what we're advocating for and working for. And just would like to add now also from the conversations we had in Berlin now with ministers and also State Secretary Jennifer Morgan and Ban Ki-moon, is there is also from the German side a lot of understanding and support for this topic, but we all agreed that sometimes I think we have to be careful that we are somehow in a bubble, and we talk a lot about how important it is, women empowerment, youth as well, particularly as women empowerment. But then if you go at site, like in the countries as well, or even to institutions who are gathering the data, you kind of notice that it's not kind of the topic has not ended in the practices that we do in companies, in governments. So it's more something, yes, we do that check. But particularly when it gets on the data gathering, when you want to have gender sensitive data on the ground as well, it becomes very difficult. So this is also for us, I think, a big reminder to be careful what we talk about, etc., and always take a close look what really happens on the ground and if we really have understood what is needed there on the ground, particularly for women. Thank you.
With this final call to action, we conclude the second episode of Polemics Rec, and we thank Club DA and the Rotary Club Vienna for letting us use the materials from this event and repurpose it for y'all. I just want to remind you to follow Polemics on social media, not to miss the next releases. This was Victor Heriton, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you all for coming.